I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A new graphic memoir by Lorena Mappa, her first book, in fact, recounts her childhood in the Philippines. In the book, Lorena returns to the country of her birth when her beloved father dies suddenly. She remembers the many people around her growing up, the many memories with her siblings, parents, grandparents, caretakers, extended family, and of course the politics of the era. It was a volatile time in the 1980s as the Marcos regime tightened its grip on the country. Soon in 1983, Ninoy Aquino, an opposition leader, is assassinated and spurs on the 1986 People Power Revolution that exiles the Marcoses. Lorena's family is affected by this. Family members are on either side of the political debate. The book is called Duran Duran, Imelda Marcos and Me. It does a splendid job recounting the political history of the Philippines during the 1980s, as well as looks at the culture, the faith of Filipinos, the role of gender, as well as class. It's also a touching book about a daughter's relationship with her father. I'll get Ms. Mappa, who joins me now, to tell us about her dad, about his death, which inspired this book, and how she views the country today, as we all seem to be paying a little more attention to it. Lorena Mappa is an illustrator and art instructor, and does lettering for comic books. She's done work for Bob's Big Boy, Equinox, Wild Magazine, New Brunswick Tourism, among others. Visit lorenamappa.com for more information. This new book is published by Conundrum Press. They'll be participating at VanCAF, the Vancouver Comic Arts Festival, the 20th and 21st of May. Please welcome to the Planta Online program in Hudson, Quebec, Lorena Mappa. Ms. Mappa, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
As I was telling you just before we started, I enjoyed many aspects of the book, not only the history of the politics that went on in the Philippines in the 1980s, but I guess at the heart of the book is family, and that's obviously the heart of being Filipino. I mean, my parents are Filipino, so I understand how much a part of one's family is part of one's identity. We all have different mm-hmm. views of family, naturally. I mean, some are close or apart emotionally or geographically, but it's still there. For you, was family, your parents and your siblings and your cousins, the extended family, I mean, that really is a part of who you are even today, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned the extended family, not just my parents and siblings, whom I've always been close to, but my cousins, whom I grew up with and have repeated mentions in my book, are like my siblings as well. And for certain cultures, I think that's very common.
Yeah.
That cousins play such a role, cousins, aunts, uncles, and certainly in the Philippines. And the same with me. I had a very large extended family, and that definitely was part of my identity.
So it's a big family, and we'll talk about certain members of the family in a sec, but the immediate family, your parents, your mom, your dad, how many siblings were you?
We were five in all, five siblings.
Yeah, and for people in this country, I mean, that's a big family, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a big family. But maybe there's a generation, too. I know that in the Philippines, that's quite normal to have a family that size. I think we were considered, you know, average. I mean, I knew several families who had, like, nine kids.
Yeah.
And not just one, but quite a few. And the families with only two or three kids, we considered that small. So I know it's unthinkable here, but that just shows more about how it is growing up there.
And so the interesting part about having such a big family is that mm-hmm. You have family members in different sectors of public life. Your grandmother was a journalist. You have an uncle who's a prominent actor and comedian. And
yes.
Then in your own, like your dad and your side of the family was on one side of this issue in 1986, and then you had an uncle who was, I guess, working in the Marcos government, right?
That's right, yes.
So it's natural, I guess, in the Philippines that you would have people on different sides of certain issues, right?
Oh, yeah, that's even going on today.
Yeah.
I mean, in the current government now, with Rodrigo Duterte, it's happening all over again. There are families that have been divided because of the politics. Luckily, not my own,
yeah.
But certainly cousins and friends. So ironically, the same kind of thing is happening right now.
Yeah, and so we'll talk about the current situation as well, because that's interesting. It interested a lot of people, even in politics. But for your childhood, what was that like for you? Was that a happy childhood?
It was very happy in that I was very oblivious as a child as well. I wasn't that, I guess, sensitive or observant or angst-ridden. Quite happy, happy-go-lucky. A lot of the observations in the book are me looking back at how it was. But while I was living it, I guess I just took everything in stride.
Yeah, you were a kid, right?
I was a kid, exactly. Yeah. I was just being a kid, not worrying too much about things. Sometimes things would happen, and I'd make an observation, and only years later, then you think about a lot of stuff, and it percolates, and you're like, okay, that's what that all meant.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you were living at the time under the Marcos regime through the 70s and the right up to 1986, I guess, when his government is deposed. So what was it like day to day? I mean, could you feel martial law had been throughout the 70s, and then it was sort of relaxed in the early 80s. But it was still there, though, right? I mean, the regime was very much a part of daily life. And so did you feel that as a kid?
What I felt was my dad was very disdainful of the government, as were a lot of people my parents associated with. And to a point where, as you said, in the early 70s, there was martial law, so that was a big shock.
Yeah.
I don't remember that so clearly because I was maybe only, a year or two old when that was being imposed. I do remember, my dad would not follow the martial law rules, and he'd go out and play poker and come home late, things like that. And when my mom would say something, he'd say, "Oh, I know the mayor," that was his standard line. Then it kind of relaxed, as you said, but the government kept doing, playing and doing all sorts of outrageous things, which I outline in the book.
Yeah.
And the Filipinos just kind of went with it. They became these passive bystanders during the whole thing for, years. And then, so that's kind of what I lived it. I remember that as a child. It was not... there wasn't any drama anymore. Mm-hmm. People just accepted, okay, well, they're doing this and they're doing that, and that's how it is, that's how life is, even if people weren't happy about it, like my dad.
Yeah.
And that's partly why, in the end, my parents wanted to move to the States, because they just were so unhappy living in that type of environment, that corrupt environment.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, that, as we read your book, Filipinos did put up with it for so long, and I guess it speaks to sort of the illustration that you do about the character of Filipinos, because I think for a lot of people who will pick up your book, it's a way for them to understand who Filipinos are. Because you talk about the character and how that's influenced by the church.
Yes, that's right. So my book has a lot of themes, but I think, in the end, what I tried to do was there's a reason for all those themes. They're all tied in together. I talk about religion, politics, but there's a connection. Why did Filipinos respond with such passivity? It's the same reason why they respond to religion in a certain way. We're just happy-go-lucky, very social, not looking for any trouble, a non-violent. Peaceful for the most part. And while those are all admirable qualities, sometimes you have to fight. Sometimes you have to stand up, for what you believe in. So what happened was, the same things that about religion that have made our people like a non-violent, because it's a very religious country.
Yeah.
But unlike other religious countries where there is so much, bloodshed and in the name of religion, Filipinos, they just take it all in stride. It's more like a social gathering or a big party.
Yeah.
And mainly Filipinos just like to party. I mean, that's that's how they are. So unfortunately, the same kind of thing happened with the government. They just kind of accepted, all right, well, that's happening and this and that, until the assassination in 1983. And that just kind of woke up the whole country.
Yeah, you're referring to the assassination of Ninoy Aquino.
That's right.
And so for you, when that happens, I mean, you remember your family's reaction to that. I mean, if members of your family went down to the airport to greet him, essentially, and come home with the news that he's been killed.
Yes, that's right. So my my aunt actually is, I think she's the niece of Doy Laurel, who in the end, who was Ninoy's boyhood friend.
Mm-hmm.
So she, my uncle, who is the actor, Noel Trinidad, and then my parents went to the airport to greet Ninoy, who was coming home, from the States, where he had been exiled by Marcos.
Mm-hmm.
But he was coming home to, you know, try to set things right again. And they went to the airport to greet them. I remember that. And I was staying at their house playing with my cousins. And then he was assassinated. And exactly as I'd written in the book, you know, they came back. There was a lot of shouting. There was a lot of what's going to happen. And from a perspective of a child, I guess I was around 13 at the time,
mm-hmm.
It was very exciting.
Yeah.
And then after that, we're just years of, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years of protest after protest. Every weekend was a rally. I mean, it was an exciting time.
Yeah, and you can feel the change that's coming over a country, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, my dad was very active in these things. And I guess it was a combination of, yes, my aunt and my uncle were connected, you know, to the opposition,
mm-hmm.
the opposition to the current government. And my dad had always, you know, been against Marcos from the beginning. And then that's when it also showed the family politics. You know, we were a family divided. Some of my dad's, you know, brothers or sisters were for the current government, for the Marcos government,
mm-hmm.
and then some weren't. And, you know, we all just had to try to get along.
Yeah. I'd like to go back to faith for just a sec. Because
yeah.
Catholics, the Filipinos are known to be devoutly Catholic, yet at the mm-hmm. same time have a unique relationship to morality, in that you can spend the night with someone other than your spouse, and Sunday morning you can go to church.
Yeah.
And you talk about that in the book about just how much religion shapes. These people, the Filipino people, and the other thing that I found you fascinating, because you take some time to talk about the aspect of the church that Filipinos are most, I guess, devout towards, and that's the Virgin Mary, and,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes more so than Christ himself.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that has, I guess it has shaped the role that women play in the household, hasn't it?
For me, it has. I mean, a lot of these thoughts that I had written down in the book and musings, and I mean, that's all my own personal observation or my own thoughts. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if, you know, who else has written about them or if it's been proven or, you know, it's just, I was, you know, in writing my book, I was thinking about why are people this way and that way. Also, it helps that I did grow up there, but I moved when I was 16. I moved to the States.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a distance between, you know, oneself and where they grew up from. You're sort of able to see things, you know, a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's necessarily a clearer way, but with I think a unique perspective. So when I was writing about the religion, I was really, a lot of it was just my own, I guess my own trying to figure out why. Well, why is it like this? And you know, why are they like that?
Yeah.
And that's what I came up with. I came up with the fact that I know that, yes, the Virgin Mary is very important in the Philippines. I mean, she is worshipped more than Jesus Christ. So I came up with reasons that, you know, maybe it started early, maybe women were let's make the Virgin Mary very popular, very, and also this, the Philippines is a matriarchal country to begin with, even before the Spanish colonized us, like hundreds of years ago. It was a country where when the men would go out and hunt, the women would stay home and run the household and govern. Mm-hmm. So I think, I didn't do a lot of research on this, but my feeling is that this a matriarchal society then developed this importance towards the Virgin Mary, and that then shaped a lot of how Filipinos have embraced Catholicism. You know, you take from the religion what you want.
Yeah.
You know, and you make it your own.
Yeah.
So,
and, I mean, you write in the book about after the assassination of Aquino, they need someone to run against Marcos. And
yes.
For a lot of people, it's Mrs. Aquino herself.
Yes.
Who has no political experience yet. They look towards her as the person who can unify the opposition against Marcos, and she's it.
Yeah, and I think because a lot of it wasn't just political. It was a moral outrage mm-hmm. about the whole thing. And to bring in, Mrs. Aquino, as you said, it was like they were also, it was like their way of saying, this is just wrong. And she I guess the country needed a sort of a mother figure, someone to trust.
Yeah.
And, again, this is a country where I'm proud of, a lot of the stuff that happened. At the same time, I'm trying to look at everything objectively.
Yeah.
But I am proud of the fact that they were very quick to embrace, a woman running yeah. for president, and it was never an issue.
Yeah, and
so,
they've
since
had. Yeah, they've since had. Another female president, and in the recent election,
that's right.
The I guess the number two, to mm-hmm. Duterte was a woman.
She's a vice president. That's right, and she was very popular also. So
right.
It doesn't seem to be an issue.
No.
Is what I'm saying,
yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah. The other thing about I wanted to mention in terms of Filipinos and the relationship to Catholics, because you touch upon this in the book, is that mm-hmm. And I always have trouble explaining this to friends. Because they like to think that if one's a Catholic, well, one's a Christian per se, and mm-hmm. and yet Christians have a sort of negative view towards homosexuality, but Catholics seem to I mean you talk about the people in your household who were gay,
yeah.
and who ran the household and were very much a part of life and accepted for themselves.
Yeah.
Even though it was a Catholic household.
Yeah, it was, and that's where the importance of Mary, of Mother, the Virgin Mary, comes into play. And again, this is all sort of my own, thoughts about why is that? Why are we as a people so tolerant, strictly Catholic, the country's like 90% Catholic, and yet, I grew up around, my grandmother had a gay houseboy and a gay cook, and it was like nothing. It was like no big deal.
Yeah.
They wore curlers in their hair. They wore false eyelashes, and it was just part of everyday life, and no one thought anything of it. And so why is that? And again, I think it has to do with the Virgin Mary. She's a very forgiving figure in religion.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very accepting figure. And Filipinos just embrace that. So it is like that. I mean, when you go to the Philippines now, there are so many, gays, transgender, everything, all in the street, and it's always been that way.
Yeah.
And no one thinks anything of it. And again, it's something that I, the same thing with a woman running for president, and it's not even an issue, which is neat.
Now, after the after 1986, after the People Power Revolution, you and your family end up where?
We moved to the States my dad had done a lot of campaigning for the government, and
uh-huh.
when the new government came into power, then he was assigned to Washington, D.C. So he was, I guess, a cultural attaché. So ironically, even if the government, you know, he had helped so much to put this government in power, and now we wanted to stay, because before that we had, you know, my parents wanted to move to the States to get away from the dictatorship. In the end, we still ended up moving, and that's when I started my new life in North America.
And then, so how did you end up in Quebec? I'm skipping about here, but...
That's okay. No, that's actually a sequel to my book. It's I went to art school in the States, and I met my now husband, who is from Quebec. He's from Sherbrooke, actually.
I see.
And he went to the same art school I did, and we married, and that's how I found myself in Canada.
So the book begins because you're in Canada, and you all as a family have to go back to the Philippines because your father dies suddenly. And how the book is told for people who are listening to us who haven't read it, you go back to the Philippines, and as you're preparing for the funeral and reconnecting with family there, you remember the memories of your childhood, the good, the bad, and everything in between. When you go back at this point, does it still feel like home for you?
Less and less. It's strange, actually. There's a period where when you go, or when I go, then the first few days are weird.
Mm-hmm.
You really feel like a visitor. And then you settle in. And then by the time you have to leave, just when I was getting settled in. So there's always a tension, I find, when I go. Because there's a period of getting used to everything again. Then there's a period of thinking, okay, yeah, I don't really belong here. Like I'm so different from this place. And then it's like old habits die hard. You know, you get back into how things used to be, and then all of a sudden you have to leave.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot of emotions there.
Yeah, and so when you go back because of your father's death and the funeral, you encounter all these people from your childhood again, as a way of telling the story, family members, friends, and so when you do look back at it all, do you understand yourself a little bit better?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when I wrote this book, it was really a form of therapy because I was not responding well to my dad's death. Even a few years after he had died, I was still struggling with it. And this book, writing all of this, helped me to understand the reason, looking for identity, trying to reconnect, becoming more self-aware. Now that I've written it, and even talking about it, you know, like the questions you're asking me and other people, there's always something more to unpack, I guess. And it's a joy. Like, I'm having a good time.
What do you think your dad would have thought of the book?
That's funny. My mom's side of the family are the ones that they're the artists. One of my uncles is actually, he was the first political cartoonist from Asia, like to work for a major American newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that on my mom's side. You know, my grandmother was a journalist, a cartoonist. My dad's side, on the other hand, nothing. Like, no, I don't, you know, he didn't even read comics, nothing, whereas my mom's side, everyone read that. So I don't even know if he would read this book, to be honest, but he'd be like super proud and happy, you know, about the reception it's getting. And the thing about my dad was, and I hope I conveyed that in the book, is he really just, you know, loved me for who I was. He never, you know, whether I did this, whatever I did, he was just happy with me. I didn't have to do this. I didn't have to achieve this. I didn't have to, you know, he was just happy with me. And that's something, that sort of unconditional love is very powerful.
Well, what have your siblings thought of the book?
My siblings, the ones are, wow, I can't believe you wrote that and are publishing it. But they're all very proud. They're all very proud. I hope I did them justice.
Yeah, because you depict yourself in the book about after your father's death. I mean, going through the fog of grief, and deciding at the end to do this book. As a way to get out of that and sort of understand it all. But at the same time, what you've done is you've given readers this great history of the Philippines in this era, a wonderful story about family, but also just the cultural markers of the time. Because, I mean, in the title of the book, you talk about the music of the 1980s and how much that's a part of your life. And for a lot of people, even if they're not from the 80s, I mean, they take great nostalgia in the music of that time, don't they?
Yeah, and you know, I am getting a lot of attention about the cultural the writing about all the pop culture in the book. Like, people really enjoyed that, and I really enjoyed it. I think people can tell that I really enjoyed writing that part, those parts.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe most of it was subconscious, but there was also a part of me, the part that really wants to connect to people and wants, you know, want people who read the book to just, you know, have different perspectives is, you know, sometimes when you read about books from people from other countries, and it's always like this war-torn this, or, you know, they're like victims, and they're poor, and I don't know. And so there was a part of me that really wanted to show, you know, there's many, many stories. From, you know, we're all individuals, and this is my particular story, and you know, I grew up, you know, in 80s, new wave, you know, pop culture, and I think that might be a surprise to, you know, a lot of readers who maybe are not expecting that kind of background, you know, from someone from, you know, another country. So that was quite conscious, actually, for me to include, you know, to make that a major part of my book.
And then the Hollywood movies that you revisit, because you start getting interested in certain actors and certain books that you've read, you want to see them in film, and you discover just, you know, the films from the 40s and musicals and James Dean, and I mean that becomes such a part of your life. I mean, and I guess that's the case, isn't it, for all of us, that the stuff that we consume at an early age shapes us, doesn't it?
Yeah, I remember, like, I feel like those two or three summers when I was, you know, 13, 14, 15, just really did shape me so much, my curiosity about the world. I loved old movies, you know, as you said, from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. You know, discovering James Dean, discovering Catcher in the Rye. I remember when I first read that book, I didn't know anything about that book.
Yeah.
I didn't write about that in the end, but I found that book in my grandfather's attic. There were no pictures, there were no reference that it was this bestseller written in the this and that.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about it, and yet I read that thing and I just devoured it. So, you know, a lot of that was going on, and what was nice too was, even if, you know, I grew up and, you know, it was quite open with the pop culture, knowing all these songs, these bands and everything. At the same time, because of the lack of, you know, internet or, you know, even libraries sometimes, in a way it was also a bit closed. So, like, I'd never heard about The Catcher in the Rye. I didn't know who James Dean was. And it was such a period of discovery. And now, you know, like, the internet's great, but it's like you can know everything right away.
Yeah.
And there isn't that slow period of discovery, which there's something in that too.
It's exciting because, I mean, you have this graph in the book. Well, I don't know if it's a graph, but it's a chart where you watch one thing and then you're interested, say, in that actor, where it was Gregory Peck. And then you want to see what Gregory Peck's in, and then there's someone in that film that you're interested in, and I guess that introduces you to Hitchcock, and then you're interested in the scores of Bernard Herrmann.
Yeah.
And it's you can see as a kid how you chart these great discoveries that you make, and it's really, as I said, it's exciting to see.
Thank you. No, I had a fun doing that, and I wondered, you know, is it too weird? But I had fun doing it.
Yeah, I think we all have that sort of experience, don't we?
Yeah.
when we discover someone that we like or that we're just even interested in.
And yeah, then, yeah. You're right. And we scribble and we make these little charts and family trees and connections and.
You mentioned that you're working on a sequel to this, or another book that builds, I guess, on this. Is that right?
Yeah, I call it a sequel. I call it a kind of a wacky sequel because this book, the original, was, you know, there are a lot of themes and a lot of emotions, and it starts with the death of my dad and flying home to his funeral. So, but I also try to make it fun, you know, like I said, with the pop culture, and hopefully I've succeeded. I think I'm happiest when people say they really enjoyed it. So, you know, I've gotten a lot of that, and that's great. Now, this next one is not going to be quite so emotional. It describes my years in art school. I moved to the States, so there's some culture shock. I meet my husband. He flies to the Philippines to meet my extended cousins. So there's a lot of culture shock there, and mayhem ensues. You know, so it's more wacky. I call it a wacky sequel to this book, and I'm having fun writing that.
So the world is paying a little more attention to the Philippines again, and perhaps just as much as the United States, say, focused on it in the 1980s. It's a troubling time, isn't it, especially with this current president. What do you make of where the Philippines is today?
You know, I was just back there, I guess a month ago, and then before that, a year ago. I've actually been back a couple of times. I was there during the election when they elected him last year, and it was very tense. No one was paying attention to Trump here in the Philippines. I kept saying, "Oh my gosh, the guy's just like Trump." Trump hadn't been elected yet, but I remember saying that, "Wow, this guy's just like Trump," and I kept telling everyone, and they were so focused on, you know, on that election. And in the end, you know, he did win. Luckily, because the Philippines has an odd system of government where you can have a president from one party and then a vice president from another party, the vice president from the other party was elected. So a bit of a check and balance there. But, you know, a year into it, I guess, it's the same. It's a country divided. There are, you know, a bunch of people who are very much behind him and support what he's doing, and then there are the others who they feel they're the elites who aren't. And the parallels are amazing, I find.
Yeah. And so when you're there, when you just even if you hear about it in the news, I mean, it does remind you of the 80s, doesn't it?
It does. I think what reminds me, you know, not really, I have to say. It just reminds me more of what's happening in the States.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really what it reminds me of.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to see at this point how this all ends, isn't it? I mean, that's, I guess, what makes us so anxious, whether, you know, whatever side of the political debate you're on. In this country, in the United States, it is an anxious time when, I guess, we haven't been used to this in a while.
Yeah, and what I'm seeing actually may be similar to what happened in the late 70s, is people are getting fatigued, and they're kind of just, oh well, you know, that's how it is there. I don't see a lot of, you know, there were some protests a few months into the, you know, the new government's election, and I think he did a few moves which were very unpopular, protests, but now people just seem fatigued. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, I don't live there, so maybe I'm wrong, but...
Well, I mean, you just look at the news here, and if he says something outrageous, and it becomes sort of a you know, fodder for comedians on late-night TV, and in a way, it sort of normalizes whatever. And the same thing with Trump. I mean, it just normalizes whatever outrageous thing they've said.
Yeah, you know, in a way, I find that Duterte is actually a bit more, not dangerous for the world, but he's a smart guy, whereas Trump, no, I don't think it is at all, but he knows what he's doing. He's kind of a loose cannon, it's true, but he also, he's pretty smart, you know. Yeah. He knows what he's saying. He's saying it for effect, whereas I do think Trump just says whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's thinking about anything.
Yeah, that's the thing that struck me about Duterte, is that he knows what to say. As you said, knows what to say, but he knows what to say so that it gets around the world.
Yes, and absolutely. He's very aware of what he's saying. He knows he's, making a splash. He's, with Trump, you know, there's all the latest stuff. Every day it's like, oh, my gosh. Whereas Duterte, like, yeah. He really knows what he's saying. He knows what he's saying, and he knows what he's doing. And, you know, if you don't agree with him, then it's, yeah, I guess it's worrisome.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time today, because this is such a beautiful book. There's so many themes to this that I hope we have touched on most of them, because it really is it's a rich book in terms of what one can learn about the history, but also this wonderful story of your family and yourself. And so congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it. As I said, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much, Joseph. No, it was a great interview, and you asked very great questions, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I had a great time writing it, and, you know, thanks so much for having me on your show.
Well, we'll look forward to the next one, won't we?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
The website for more, LorenaMappa.com. The book is called Duran Duran, Imelda Marcos, and Me. It's from Conundrum Press. Lorena Mappa joined me on the line from Hudson, Quebec. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plante.